Rolling.
Welcome to the Misfit Stars podcast. I'm Shannon Curtis.
And I'm Jamie Hill. Hi, everyone. Hi, baby.
Hi, honey.
How are you?
I'm A-OK.
Yeah?
Uh-huh.
Great. I'm so happy to hear that.
Yeah.
Just was a solid answer.
Yeah. How about you?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. No major complaints. I'm not even sure I have any minor complaints.
Scrolling through looking for complaints and not really any.
Yeah.
Good.
Checking
glad to hear it.
Complaint bank a little bit empty, which is good.
Yes.
So later on in this episode, we're going to talk about frickin' feminism.
Frickin' feminism.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Got to talk about that.
Seems apropos.
It does. It does. It's timely.
Yeah.
So we'd like to welcome our new listeners. Hi, new listeners. How are you? If this is the first time you're listening to the podcast, welcome. We're so happy you're here. This is a weekly conversation that Shannon and I have with one another. You know, it's become this really cool check-in that we have, this sort of intentional date, really.
Yeah.
It's like an hour-long talking date.
It's an hour-long talking date where we're forced, because we've set ourselves on the schedule to do this weekly, mm-hmm. to talk about the stuff in our lives that seem most important that week.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's kind of unusual.
Yeah.
You know? I like it.
I like it too.
Yeah.
And we're doing it on microphones because that's normal. So we hope that you enjoy being on this little journey with us. We hope you get some value out of it. We do, you know. Like with every good thing in my life, I primarily get personal value out of it. And I think I do because hopefully there's a service element to it too.
Absolutely.
I would have liked to thank some new supporters, but we don't have new supporters this week.
What?
Well, you know, like we've always said, I mean, I feel the same way. Get your shit together, people. Non-supporters, what are you even doing
what
with your lives?
What are you doing? No.
So we always have zero or one or two. You know, a big week for us is two new supporters. You know, sometimes it's one. Sometimes it's zero. This is a zero. That's okay. I get it. We're doing a niche thing. But, you know, if you're one of the people who's been listening to this for a while and you're not yet a supporting member, we would just like, as always, to invite you. Please, become a more active part of this. This podcast, first of all, we hope brings value to your life. If you've been listening for a while, presumably you feel that way. Secondly, it's more generally a way for us to aggregate some support, just another little weird stream of support for what we're doing more broadly in our lives, you know? So if you like what we're doing in the world, if you like who we are as people, the energy that we're putting out there, please use this podcast and being a supporting member as an opportunity to support us more generally.
And the way you can do that is by going to misfitstars.com/join.
Right.
And it'll just walk you through all the things that you need to know to become a supporting member. Support levels start at $5 a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's like buying us one of us a cup of coffee. Maybe two of us if it's just drip.
Yeah. Right?
It's really an amount to that. A cup of coffee a month.
You could get us a whole thing of instant from Trader Joe's for that.
That's so true.
And that's a big deal.
You love that stuff.
Oh, I could be so caffeinated. Man, dreams. Hashtag dreams.
So go to misfitstars.com/join and check out the different support levels available. We would appreciate your support so much. It actually matters. So those of you who are already supporters, you're awesome.
Thank you.
You are making an actual difference in our lives by throwing your lot in with ours and supporting this podcast. So thank you.
Yeah, it's really true. Yeah. We're very grateful. And, you know, while we're in this what can you do for us phase of things, another thing you could do for us.
What can you do for us?
I was also thinking that you could go to Apple Podcasts, maybe to Stitcher, wherever. Leave us a glowing 5-star review. All that means is just pop on over to Apple Podcasts, find Misfit Stars. You can do a Google search for Misfit Stars Apple Podcasts. It'll just take you to the page. And just click the little 5-star thing and then type a few words about what you like about the podcast.
Yeah. You can say what you think.
You can. You are empowered on the internet in that way. Because what is the internet?
For better or worse.
What is the internet really other than just a massive aggregation of everyone's opinions?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Join the discussion. So, you could basically drive more people to hear us doing this if you do that. And so if you listen to this podcast and you think, you know what, there are probably other people in the world who are like me, who like the things I like, who also would get some value out of this, you going and signal boosting it with a review on Apple Podcasts is a way to engage Apple's algorithm to then put this podcast in front of more eyeballs.
Yeah.
And we would love that. Thank you.
Feed the algorithms.
Uh-huh. That's the other thing. It's opinions and algorithm feeding. You can engage the two major points of the internet by doing this.
Woo!
You can be an ideal internet citizen.
Oh my.
And that's, you know, hashtag goals.
Yeah.
So what do we do this week?
Oh man, so much stuff.
Busy week this week for us, it felt like.
Yeah, I continued writing. I've got like 7 songs and 2 interstitial music pieces completely written for this new record.
That's like, each song is 10% of a 10-song record and each interlude is like half, so it's like 5%. Uh-huh. You're like 80% of the way through a 110% record.
Thank you.
You're overachieving.
Oh, yeah, you know, that's
this
what
is
I'm
like
here to do.
When you would do the extra problem in grade school for extra credit.
I did that all the time.
Yeah, me too.
That's like my MO.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's my sweet spot.
Yeah, it's a comfortable place for me too.
So yes, that's been going great. We had dinner with some friends this weekend and they were asking about this year's record theme and they asked, do you have a title yet?
Yeah.
And I have not shared my title with anybody but you prior to sharing it with our friends Brian and Catherine.
Yep.
And when I said the title, Catherine like pretty much literally flipped the F out.
Yeah.
Like she is just like, oh my gosh, I love it so much. Yeah. I love it so much.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, she did a somersault, literally.
So I guess it's good.
It was actually metaphorical.
It resonated. Yeah, metaphorical somersault.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess it resonates.
Yeah.
With my like target demographic.
This is great. It's so good that you have like a sort of test audience of 1.
Yeah.
And you got a direct hit.
I did.
You're so far 1-for-1.
I know.
I'd say stop now.
Yeah.
Don't tell anyone else the title, including when we put the record out. Because it's only disappointment and heartbreak from here on in. You'll never be better than 100%.
It's
you know
so
what I mean?
True. Yeah. I'm going to keep that sample size low.
Yep.
Yeah. It was encouraging, though, to share it with a friend and to have that kind of response. It was neat.
It's a good theme. It's engaging. It's got a lot of possibility. It's got a lot of potential that you are actively realizing with your writing. Mm-hmm. It's super cool.
Yeah.
We have started working on our first song from this record together, you and I, in the studio.
I know.
And that has been exciting.
It has been very exciting.
Yeah.
It's always fun. So for those of you who are not familiar with our process, I have my little songwriting studio upstairs in our house, and that's where I do all of my songwriting. And so, you know, making demos of the ideas that I have for the songs, writing the lyrics and the melody and all that kind of stuff, putting it together. And then eventually I bring that downstairs to Jamie's studio where he, you know, that's where we do like the full fleshing out work, you know, like getting the production nailed in, the mixing, all that kind of stuff. It's just my little ideas kind of get like all the clothing on them,
yeah.
You know? And so it's always really fun for me because I have limited skills. In the production and mixing side of things.
You're selling yourself short.
Thank you.
You're doing an increasingly good job.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I recognize that too. But I also, it's really fun to, when I get to bring my little sketches to you and like, and then we can together then like fill in the colors. It's really fun.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was
well,
really
for
fun.
Me too.
Great.
Yeah. And speaking of which, like I feel like we're about to have a whole new palette of colors available to us because we sort of, accidentally rewired our entire studio last night.
We did. It was, wow, it was work. Yeah.
So, like, we have 2 pairs of speakers. We have, like, the sort of, you know, the sort of more everything sounds amazing on those speakers. Those are good because you can hear a lot of depth and detail. And then we have the kind of more crappy, these just sound like everyday speakers that I mostly work on. Because like, if you can make it sound magical on those, it sounds magical
they're
everywhere.
They're like a stereo bookshelf speaker type thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, it's really easy to make things sound really good on the big speakers. Everything sounds good on them. Even if it's not actually that good, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you make it sound good on the bookshelf speakers, you're winning. And the bookshelf speakers were acting really erratic last night. And we thought at first it was the speakers. Fortunately, it's not. And that's good because they're vintage and old and
hard to
replace. And then I thought maybe it was the amp, but fortunately it's not because that's good. That would be hard to replace too. What it was is an intermediary like mixer that we have in between like the computer and the speakers. And so we just got that out of the chain and basically plugged the speakers directly into the audio interface, which is fancy and good. And like, we probably should have been doing this for the last like 4 years.
Totally.
But we, for some reason, had this mixer in between. It was sort of a vestige of an older way of working.
Yeah.
Long story short, plugging it directly into the interface with nothing in between. Holy cow.
Our system sounds like infinitely better than it did yesterday.
It's like we got a $3,000 speaker upgrade.
It was wild.
It's insane how much better it sounds.
How excited are you to like dig into project and all the other projects you've got on the docket now that you have like a new and improved listening situation.
Yeah, well, I just feel like I'm going to be able to make a lot more accurate choices even more quickly.
That's great.
Which is wild because like the speakers didn't themselves change. Like nothing that we have changed. We didn't buy any pieces of gear. In fact, we subtracted some.
We did.
And by subtracting some pieces of gear, we have a better sound. And I
there's
think
there's a lesson here.
It feels like a huge metaphor for life. Just overall,
less
right?
Less is more.
Seriously. Yes. So that's legitimately exciting. It's
definitely.
Like we got a free studio upgrade.
Yeah, I know.
Into that. And your record is going to benefit from it for sure. And that's cool.
It's going to be awesome.
As are the other three records that I'm currently working on.
Awesome.
I'm all of a sudden super busy.
Yeah, I know.
Well, it's kind of wild.
That's how it goes in our world.
Yeah.
Right? You got some great projects. I was thinking about this the other day. Like, you always have something going on. Like, yep. There's always something, you know, in your orbit that you're working on. And legitimately, all the stuff that you're working on right now, I know personally, I'm excited to be hearing all of it coming through your studio speakers. Like, it's just great stuff. All of it.
Yeah.
In all different ways, but really cool stuff. Hey, one of the things that you're going to be diving into big time, it's very exciting, and it relates to me in that this whole thing came about because of our album fundraiser from 2019.
Yeah, last year.
So if you recall, if you were around us last year in our album fundraiser, the final stretch goal we made for our album fundraiser last spring was a pay it forward goal. And essentially what we decided we would do was if we funded that pay it forward goal, what we, Jamie and I, were committing ourselves to do was to find a local artist here in Tacoma. Mm-hmm. Who's just getting going, who could benefit from a lift up, you know, in some way. And we were going to invite and somebody who has something to say, somebody who has real potential in terms of their artistic output.
Someone whose work, like A, moves us.
Yeah.
And, you know, B, we have really high standards.
Yeah.
Right? So it's got to be someone that's got like some like legitimate songwriting prowess.
Yeah.
Something real, like really to say.
Yeah. And so what we were going to do is we were going to find that person. And we were going to invite them into our studio and make an EP for them so that they wouldn't be having to pay for studio time or for Jamie's mixing and production abilities. We would, you know, create a five-song EP and then pay for a short run of CDs to be made so that they could take this work out into the world and either sell those CDs or share them with people to start building their community of supporters.
Yeah.
Just giving them a meaningful lift up in the beginning, you know, and an inflection point in their potential career as an artist.
Yeah.
And so when we got back from tour last year, we started scouring the open mics around town and began listening to people. And one person that we had heard previously at an open mic was always in the back of our head.
Yep.
And just we kind of kept coming back around to, like, you know what, this is the right person for this time. And so we finally selected the artist for whom we are with whom we're going to do this pay it forward project.
Yeah.
And he was over yesterday as our first day having him in the studio for this particular project. And man, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. Do you want to talk about him a little bit?
I would love to. Yeah. So his name is Jonathan Mahler. He is just a solo single person making music, but he does so under a band name. He experimented a little bit, you know, over the last year or whatever with, you know, both playing under his own name and playing under the name Trusty Sea Creatures. And he realized that when he called it a band, it seemed more engaging to people for some reason. So he calls it a band. It's kind of like a Bright Eyes thing, right?
Yeah.
Bright Eyes is just one guy, Connor Oberst, but he goes by Bright Eyes. And it's like, it gives you more imagination about what it could be, you know,
than
just being someone's name. And it's wonderful. And Johnny is an old soul.
Mm-hmm.
Like most good songwriters, he's really quick-witted, you know?
Yeah.
Really, really intelligent, has a wry sense of humor that pops out often. His voice sounds a lot like a young Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits.
Oh, interesting, because I sometimes hear also the Radiohead dude. Why can't I think of
Tom York?
Tom York,
really?
Sometimes.
Oh, when he goes falsetto, I could hear that.
In falsetto. Yeah. And also, like, songwriting style, there's some Radiohead and also some, and his voice too, sometimes some Bruce Springsteen.
Yep.
Like, I think it's all those things, you know. But it's his own thing. It's not like he's not a singer who has an affect, like he's trying to sound like anybody. It is him.
Yeah.
But I'm hearing these, you know, touch points.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right. And that whole thing about him not having an affect, that's so important to me. And I know it is to you too, you know. When someone is working to figure out what their own idiosyncratic voice is and to nurture that and develop that within themselves and put that out into the world, that's what I, as a fan, as a listener, that's what I want to hear.
I think that's also a metaphor for life.
Right? Seriously.
Outside of the music realm.
Seriously.
You know?
Yeah. And he has an idiosyncratic voice. He's deeply emotional in his writing. He is just, he's so compelling and he paints these vivid pictures. He's so good at focusing on specific moments and using a zoomed in focus on a specific moment just in a situation to talk more broadly about what that situation is, you know?
Yeah.
It's so often the case that like he'll have two verses in a song and one describes one specific moment and another one describes another not connected to the first moment, second specific moment, but around the same situation.
Right.
And between those two, like you can make a straight line with any two points. He has just this really finely honed ability to make a straight line through those two points that points directly at the thing he's aiming at.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
It's just wonderful.
It's really compelling. I can't wait to share this with you. And we will be posting on social media, you know, photos and things from our studio sessions with Johnny throughout the process. Yeah. And we'll, of course, let you know when the record is done and where you can get it because you're going to want it. It's so great.
We're aiming to have it done before we go on tour mid-June.
Yeah. You know, I wanted to mention one more thing from our session with him yesterday, which just was like, it was a moment for me. As he was walking out the door, we had already given hugs to, you know, say goodbye and he was leaving. He paused and he said, you know, I've been through a lot over the last year in terms of my relationship with my music. He had a band together for a while and then it didn't work out. He, you know, was making some of his home recordings and trying to do something with that. But over a series of, and playing out and that, and, you know, and having some disappointing, you know, experiences, just it seemed like he's had maybe a year of discouragements around his music and his music making. And he shared with us that he had gotten to the place recently where he had kind of told himself, you know, maybe I should just set aside music altogether and focus on other things in my life, my family, my son, my wife, he has a podcast that he does about like, you know, pop culture kind of stuff. And he was really ready to hang up the music stuff.
No.
but then he shared with us that getting your email saying that this, we wanted to share this Pay It Forward project with him and do this with him just reinvigorated all of his desire and passion for doing it. And it just floored me because we're able to offer this to him because our community of supporters supported this project.
Yeah.
Like you all who contributed to that fundraiser last year are making possible the reignition of a flame in this artist whose work needs to be in the world. Like you did that.
It's a tremendously big deal.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's so awesome. And that was really special.
Yeah, and a really neat note to kick this project off on. So he's a really capable self-recordist, you know? And so he records in like a Porta studio. It's like, it's not a computer. It's like a physical thing that you could carry under your arm, you know? Like a cassette 8-track was back in the day. It's just the digital version of that. It's a cassette 8-track with no cassette. That's all it is.
Right.
It's just the cassette's been swapped out for a hard drive and that's it. Similarly rudimentary, and he gets amazing sort of, you know, beginning results. Like you can't make a polished recording in that,
right?
But he just he records some really wonderful parts, really wonderful textures. And so the way we're going to approach a project is we're using all of the stuff he's recorded as his demos, a lot like we do with you, honestly.
Yeah.
We start with your demos and then we build upon them and turn them into the thing they need to be.
Yes.
We're going to do the same thing with him.
It's so great.
It's great because what it really allows is just the best of all possible worlds combination where all the stuff he did in his most vulnerable, private, intimate moments at home, you know, we can preserve that stuff that he captured and the stuff that needs to be improved upon and polished up until it's, you know, as shiny as it needs to be, we can also do that.
Yeah.
We can have everything.
Yeah.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be really great.
Yeah. The songs are amazing.
On the note of our community getting behind supporting people, we didn't have us on our list, but we need to be talking about how last week you stumbled upon a social media post made by a collaborator of ours from years ago.
From 9 years ago.
You should talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just wanted to remind you of it. And so
thank you. Yeah.
Go.
So in the transition between the first part of Shannon's solo career and what we'd consider like the modern era of Shannon's career from 2013 onward, when she started putting out full-length records kind of more in the art pop vein that she's mining now, in that transition period between those two phases, 2010-2011, we were just kind of figuring out like what's changing, what's happening here. And in doing that, Shannon was starting to write the songs that would eventually become CinemaScope. And she was writing them kind of slowly. She was not on the pace she's on now, which has accelerated dramatically.
Yeah.
And so what we did in 2011, our output that year, is we did two singles, right? We did a single for Brightest Light in the Room, and we did a single for Let's Stay In. But each of those was we released it as a maxi single. So it was a song, a B-side, and then like 8 or 9 remixes and different interpretations.
Of the single, yeah.
And there was this guy, and he's being really public with stuff in engaging around this. So
yes.
It's fine to say his name. His name is Keith Thomas. He goes by Vulcha, which is an awesome artist name. V-U-L-T-C-H-A.
Uh-huh.
Vulcha. And he did a couple of remixes for Let's Stay In back in the day. So that means that we just send the vocal from the song and nothing else. And that he puts his own music under it. So it's like a musical reinterpretation. That's how you can think of it.
And they were great.
They were great.
The remixes he did were amazing.
They were killer. Absolutely killer. Musically literate, intelligent, interesting to listen to, totally different take. Just ticked all the boxes.
Yeah.
Super cool. And then like we just have been friends since then, you know?
Yeah.
He messaged me on Instagram last week. And he just basically was like, hey, we're struggling a little bit. And I started this GoFundMe. I just wanted to let you know about it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's all really it was. And I read it. I opened it up and read it. And long story really short, he and his family have been, they're in the process of relocating from New York, where they've been living forever. They sold their house there.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved down to Georgia to be closer to family.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of that happening, they were staying with a family member.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, another family member got into a dispute with them and pulled a gun. And all of a sudden, they didn't have a place to stay. And it's Keith, his wife, and their 3 kids, the oldest of whom is deeply autistic.
Right, because you don't stay living in a place where someone else who lives there has pulled a gun on you.
No. No, like, you can't.
You just can't do that.
Yeah. And so, like, all of a sudden, they didn't have a place to stay. Like, they had this whole thing planned out. There was going to be this buffer transition time.
Right.
And all of a sudden, like, there was no buffer, no transition time. And they are staying in motels.
They have been for a couple months, right?
Yeah, a month and a half now.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I did a side quest.
That's right.
something we've been doing every so often for the past, you know, 9 months or so now. A fun new thing in our lives. Where I'll just like, I just, you know, like I always do now, I just put out, I wrote about it a little bit and just put out the word. If anyone wants to help me raise some money that we can send to this family to help them through their time of need, whatever you send, I'll just aggregate and pass it along.
Mm-hmm.
And long story real short, our community raised $2,200, over $2,200.
It's amazing. There were like 41 people that contributed.
Yes.
Amazing.
Unbelievably cool.
So good.
You know, every time we do one of these, it's just so uplifting for me, you know?
It's a reminder to me that people really do care about others, and not just people that they know, but strangers.
Yeah.
You know, and want to actually put their money where their mouth is in terms of wanting to live a life of empathy and compassion for people in need. It's just awesome.
It's so great. It's so wonderful. And, you know, it's been a stressful week in the news for a number of reasons. And to have this energy sort of on the other side of the scale has felt great.
Absolutely. And you got a chance to talk to Keith and his wife last night on the phone, right?
Yeah. And it was just wonderful. I've never actually, I don't think, spoken with Keith before. We had always just communicated, this being the modern age, via, you know, text or email or whatever,
right.
You know? And he's just rad. He's such a neat guy. He's just incredibly smart.
Mm-hmm.
And just insightful and interesting to talk with and fun. I got to talk with his wife for a minute, too, and she's lovely. She's from Jamaica and has just the most beguiling accent. There is something so soothing to me about a Jamaican accent. It's so musical. It's just, It's just the best.
Yeah.
So it was great. Got to talk to both of them and then got to, you know, send them $2,200 today.
So good.
Which I really think is going to help move the needle for them. Just give them a little cushion, you know. That's the hope. That's the goal. Yeah. You know, he's already got a job lined up.
Awesome.
The onboarding process for the company you got a job with, it's a larger company. So the onboarding, it's not like you get a job and you start tomorrow. It's like you get a job and you start 3 weeks from now, you know.
Right, right.
So, you know, hopefully this will help bridge that gap. And that's all it's going to be, is a gap. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, they're not down and out. They're just in an unexpectedly terrifying, unplanned for situation because of some real trauma, you know?
Yeah.
And they're going to get through it, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's, yeah, it's good. It's really good.
You know, props to Keith for being willing to be vulnerable publicly about his time of need, you know?
Yeah. That's seriously. I said
really
this to
hard to do.
Yeah.
So props to him for that. And big props to our community for coming through. And, you know, I'm grateful that our community trusts us.
Yes.
Y'all who contributed to this don't know Keith.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know the situation, but you've trusted us that this is something that is worth lifting up. And I'm just really grateful for that trust and for your actual involvement in helping.
It's wild to me when I think about it. It's like, I just put the word out and people just start Venmoing me money. You know what I mean? If that's not trust, what is?
It's humbling.
It's humbling. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing.
That was uplifting and good. I'm happy that it happened.
Yeah.
What else? We watched a shitload of Elizabeth Warren videos.
that's on our list.
That's another thing we did this week.
You know, so yeah, the election, Super Tuesday part of the election happened last week, and it did not go well for the candidate that I was supporting, that we were supporting.
Yeah.
And there are lots of reasons for that. And, you know, it was a bummer of a week. I feel personally like we as a nation missed out big time in a big, big way, denying ourselves the opportunity to be led by this person.
Yeah.
I think she would have been a transformational president in 2020. But the would have beens and could have beens are not, those do not define the circumstance. I think she's going to continue to fight for the kind of transformational change that she wants to see.
And I think she's going to be an incredibly effective advocate for the things she believes in.
Absolutely.
Regardless of whether she's a president. She would have had a bigger pulpit.
Absolutely.
And having her as an avatar, I think, would have been inspiring. You know, the kind of inspiring that maybe could cause generational change, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's, I think, the thing we're missing out on.
Yes.
But, like, also, she's not going anywhere. She's youthful as hell for her age. Like, you know, if she wants to run again in 4 years or 8 years, like, that's absolutely something
and
that could happen.
In the meantime, she's very savvy about finding the levers of power that she has access to and pulling on them until she gets what she's fighting for.
Yeah.
You know, and what she's been fighting for is not to be president.
Yeah.
To be president was her vehicle, was the vehicle she was aspiring to in order to get the things done that she wants to get done for us.
Yeah.
The goal still doesn't change, right? Like, just the avenue by which she's going to fight for getting those things has changed.
Yeah.
It's not going to be from the seat of president this year.
Yeah.
But I have no doubt in my mind that she's the kind of fighter that is going to continue fighting those fights behind the scenes, mm-hmm. in front of the scenes. I mean, like, she's not giving up. That's just not who she is.
No, I don't think so.
But I was sad, for sure. Like, it's a big bummer. And so I consoled myself by watching her on videos.
Yeah.
and the remarkable thing was, the day after she dropped out of the race, it turns out all of the news media wanted to talk about her on that day. Weird. Where was this 2 weeks ago, 2 months ago, talking about the kind of transformational leadership she could have brought to the country? It's like, ah, you guys, like, you could have.
Yeah, it was wild. Sooner. I mean, you and I talked about this a whole lot in January and in February. Like, we would read stories, I mean, in major outlets, in NPR, in the Washington Post, in the New York Times, talking. I mean, when she was at worst third place, right? Talking about the race, talking about how it's at the top, it's between Biden and Sanders. And then, you know, down toward the bottom, there's Mayor Pete and there's Amy Klobuchar. And talking about, there would be entire articles that never said the words Elizabeth Warren.
Bizarre.
You know?
Really bizarre.
And yeah, if you erase somebody from a campaign, from coverage of a campaign, they're not going to do as well.
Right.
It is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. And yet the day after she dropped out, like you couldn't go to a news outlet and not see her face and her name plastered in headlines everywhere. And they weren't just like articles about how she's dropped out. It was articles about all these incredible plans that she has, the depth of knowledge that she has that's unparalleled with anybody else who's run for president in years.
Yeah.
Like just
yeah, we knew, man. We knew.
It's so frustrating. Really? But anyway, it resulted in a bunch of media coverage, which was great because I got to watch Elizabeth Warren on videos that I had, you know, there was a great piece, video that her campaign put out sort of as a thank you to everybody for being involved in the movement. And
got a little teary.
Jamie got teary.
Yeah. Shannon oddly hadn't gotten teary. She saw it before I did. She didn't tear up. I saw it. I teared up and then she teared up.
I did. I teared up because you teared up. Yeah. And
me crying makes Shannon cry.
It does.
Aww.
And then, of course, there was the Saturday Night Live stuff. And that video, that TikTok thing with her and Kate McKinnon, it's legendary.
Yeah.
Just absolute legend.
So good.
So freaking good. If you haven't seen it, you have to look it up.
Yeah.
It
strikes me that the media right now seems to really prefer female political candidates after they've destroyed them.
And that's a great segue into what our topic is today, I think.
Let's just head there, right there.
Okay, that sounds good. We're going to take a break first.
Oh, are we?
We are going to take a break.
Great.
I have to pee. Come on.
Of course. Right.
So we're going to take a break and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about feminism, y'all.
Can't wait.
See you soon.
We're pissed.
You know, I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess I'm always
what,
a little...
What, are you not pissed?
I guess I'm always a little pissed.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, I wouldn't characterize my overarching mood today or really most of the days in the last week as being angry. Like,
really? My experience of you is a little bit different.
Well, no, I mean, I have moments, but honestly, I don't feel consumed by anger.
No, and the past few days you've been fine. I would say, to be super fair, that like Wednesday, Thursday, you were pretty down.
Okay, yes, I was down for sure, but I was also, part of that was sadness.
Yeah,
you know, like there was stuff, lots of stuff going on. But generally speaking, I feel okay. You know, I don't feel consumed by my feelings.
Yeah, which is good because we can look more objectively at them that way. And you know, there's a lot to look at. What you should take the lead on this one.
Okay. Well, you know, we were talking about what we should talk about. And honestly, this topic has really been at the forefront of my mind all week. So it seemed obvious that we needed to talk about it during the podcast today.
You and I both like wrote 10,000 plus words on Facebook talking to people about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it has been all consuming.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, it's a topic that... Yes, it's for me, this last week has come to the fore because of the end of Elizabeth Warren's campaign and some of the reasons why her campaign didn't do as well as I had hoped. And, you know, and so it's the starting point is the political conversation, but really the ideas about how sexism and misogyny have a stranglehold on so much of our society and culture. That's the starting point, but it is extrapolated into the experience of every woman in this country. And so, you know, it starts with the Warren conversation, but it's applicable across the board. And so, you know, I like looking at the ways in which her campaign was depicted in the media. You started to say that earlier before the break.
Yep.
You know,
or not depicted in the media.
Right. The erasure of, you know, of that. And when you're in the middle of that and you're seeing this happen, you're like, but why? And like, it's really hard to pick apart how and why that those kinds of things are happening. Even and you can kind of see, you know, how male candidates are held to a different standard than female candidates
or no standard at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Just viewed through an uncritical lens.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And so there's that. There were some of the things about how, you know, let me just get into my first thing that I learned this week. Here's something I learned this week.
What'd you learn?
And, you know, I should, it's something I should have been more aware of earlier, but mm-hmm. I just, this week was a fresh, new, very stark lesson in the idea that, you know, it's easy to point to people who are overtly sexist
sure.
or overtly misogynistic.
Sure.
Like our current president.
Sure.
You know, and be like, that person's a sexist.
Yeah.
And
maybe you got a really sexist uncle.
Yeah.
Easy to tell.
Harvey Weinstein.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's easy to point to the really overt sexist people and be like, that's bad. You know, and it's cartoonish and it's badness, you yeah. know? What I have learned this week is that there's a real problem in our society with people on the other side of the political spectrum, mm-hmm. you know, people who claim to be progressive about a lot of things, who have a deep and unresolved massive problem with sexism and misogyny. It was naive of me to think otherwise, but this week has been just a real, just has shown a big light on that. I think it's easy to say you're not a sexist
sure.
when you've clothed your ideals or your, you know, the things that you say you stand for in altruistic things otherwise.
Sure.
You know, you can be like, I want to help poor people, or I'm, you know, I want to equalize things economically for all people.
Yeah. I can't be a sexist. I was raised by two women.
Yeah.
I can't be a sexist.
Someone actually
I have daughters.
Someone actually said that to me this week, which was awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
it's the I have black friends of sexism.
Exactly. And, you know, so I think that for that reason, because sexism on the quote unquote progressive left
yeah.
is often clothed or masked by not being so overt as it can be in, you know, overt sexists, and also just clothed in other altruistic views about the world, you
sure.
know, it's gone unnoticed. It's gone undiagnosed and unexamined
yeah.
in a lot of people.
Like, if you're a progressive and you were spending the last 3 months arguing against Elizabeth Warren's electability,
that's
a
sexism.
Sign.
It's, yeah, absolutely. It's either sexism from within or an acceptance of the sexism of others.
Right? Sure.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely true.
So that's been a tough lesson for me this week. I think, you know, I also, like, you know, that this was a sort of a national conversation this week. Huh. Opened it up the, you know, I was talking about it with various people on social media. It's really wild. It's really wild how this conversation about this, you know, national event shone a light on it was dudes
yeah.
mostly.
Yeah.
And this is not to say that women don't buy into misogynistic thinking, because I think it's internalized and we can also buy into that way of thinking because it's so internalized in
sure.
our structures of our society, right?
Sure.
But
and women can benefit from it too.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So the national conversation and the ways in which I was trying to engage about this idea, like on social media this week, really shone a light on the fact that there are men who claim progressive values who, even in their talking with me personally, they're not even talking about Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
Are speaking to me in a way that is just dripping with misogyny and sexism.
Right.
Like, holding me to an entirely different standard than they're holding themselves. There was this one dude on Facebook who just, you know, it was so frustrating because he was literally pulling out all the tropes, like, you know, women are too emotional. You're being too, he was accusing me of being too emotional.
Yeah, he was saying, I'm just saying facts. You're being too emotional.
And like, if you go back and I've gone back and read our interaction, I'm like, actually I wasn't being yeah. emotional.
I mean, just like, if you look at the whole frame of the conversation you had with this guy,
yeah.
like, he came onto a thread where you were just like, the post that you had made was just lamenting Elizabeth exiting the race, and you were sad about it, and
yeah.
you were sad for what we had lost. And he felt a need. He felt, in modern vernacular, triggered enough by that to come on and make a completely like and hijack the conversation and take it a completely different direction and make it personal toward you. But who's emotional?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He inserted himself into a conversation in a way that it was completely unrelated.
Yeah.
And he pulled out the woman as fraud trope, the woman as liar trope in his initial comment.
Sure.
And from the get-go, you know, I mean, and here's the guy, he's a Bernie supporter. I'm going to go ahead and say that. Like, he's a Bernie supporter who literally, like, his comment was, if she doesn't endorse Bernie, she's a fraud.
Yeah.
That's...
That's problematic.
It is. Like, it...
Seriously, those five words are, like, wrong in, like, three different ways.
Yeah. So here's a guy who's clearly supporting a progressive candidate. He's got this person who commented on my thread has progressive ideals.
Yep.
As much as they are, you know, but is also in the same sentence admitting to completely using the woman as fraud trope to discount the leadership of a woman who's brought so much to this movement. Like, it's just, it's unreal.
The idea that he knows better than Elizabeth Warren what the best way is to use the levers of power to advance progressive ideals.
Yes.
And that you, another woman, have not been paying as much attention as he has and needs to be educated on how these levers of power work. So many assumptions under there.
I know it was really frustrating.
And the idea that if a woman doesn't do what you, in your either limited or vast understanding of the situation, think she should do, as opposed to what her own sense of agency guides her to do.
Yes.
It's just wild.
It is. But this was the eye-opening thing for me this week. You know, that was a personal interaction that I had that I saw happening in a lot of other people's discourses that I wasn't even involved in.
Yeah.
You know, there's a real problem. There's a real problem, and we need a real reckoning, because in this particular scenario, we passed up on a leader that could have really been transformational for our country.
Yeah.
Because so many on the left, so many quote unquote progressives have an unexamined issue with sexism and misogyny.
Yeah.
It's a shame. And I don't know how we get that reckoning. But you know, what we need is men to get in the fight.
Yeah, and you know, that segues pretty nicely into, you know, the first thing that I had kind of taken a note on here for this talk, which is that men are the ones who have to be responsible for creating a society-wide accepted baseline of feminism.
You all need to get on board for it to actually, for equity to actually come about.
It's funny, because like when you and I were talking about this, you know, I was like, it's got to start with men. And you're like, well, that's not right, because women have been talking about it for, you know, 100 years. And that's, well, there you go. That's true.
A lot longer than
100 years, right? And yeah, you know, men do not need to start this. It's already in motion. But like, it's not going to get society-wide acceptance, and it's not going to be centered in the way it needs to be until men get on board, you know? And there's two reasons for this, right? So one, there's a moral component to this for me. First of all, like, men are the ones who have set things up this way. And so we need morally to be the ones to fix it.
Yeah.
You know, like, you can't clean up someone else's side of the street. Mm-hmm. Like, women can't do our work for us on this one. And it doesn't matter if it was our parents or our grandparents or our great, 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 great grandparents or someone 10,000 years ago who started this. It doesn't matter. Like, we men currently are living in the results of it in a way that benefits us.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually, but we think it does, right?
Right.
It gives us more power in certain situations, which is a benefit, right?
In temporary ways.
Yeah. In temporary, really deeply unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
But, you know, because we're the people who are benefiting from it, we need to be the ones to dismantle it. So that morally, I think that's just a baseline. And then secondly, like, practically, because we are the ones with that power, we need to be the ones to take the lead to rebalance that power dynamic, you know? Like, women aren't going to take that power from us. We need to cede it.
Yeah, I think the way to say it would be, like, that you need to take the lead among men, because women don't need your leadership in feminism.
Yeah, right.
In active feminism.
Sure,
you know,
fine.
Like, joining the fight, I think, is the language that needs to be highlighted.
Sure,
you know?
That's fine.
Because again, if you're taking the lead, you're centering men. Again, yeah. You know what I mean? But if you're taking the lead within your gender, mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Although, you know, men taking the lead with men is a recursive statement that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you know? So I guess I don't know. I have a little issue with that. Because here's the thing. Women have been fighting really hard for this for hundreds and hundreds of years, and it's not getting where it needs to go. And it will never get where it needs to go until men step up.
Until men become partners.
Right.
Men don't need to lead the effort because in saying that men are leading the effort, you're centering men
sure.
on being the one the thing that makes it effective.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
I think so.
Yeah. So again, language is important, right? And there's so much about this topic that is driven by how we talk about men and women.
Yeah.
And I think so it's just really essential to really just take captive those words. It matters how we talk about this, mm-hmm. you know? I had this great, like, jaw-dropping conversation with a friend the other night who shared with me, she shared with me a conversation she had with her 14-year-old son about, he was asking why, you know, how did sexism hurt Elizabeth's campaign? Mm. And
first of all, amazing question for a 14-year-old boy to ask.
It's a pretty politically active family, and yeah. they do talk about this stuff a lot. But yes, awesome that he even asked the question.
Yeah.
But he asked his mom how to get rid of sexism, and we got into the discussion about how it's going to take people with privilege. So I'm just going to read the comment that my friend made. He asked how to get rid of sexism, and we got into the discussion about how it's going to take people with privilege, him as a white male, to step aside for women. I said, you know, there's basically zero daylight between Elizabeth and Bernie's policies. Imagine if Bernie had stepped aside and said, you know what? It's time for a woman to lead. I throw my full support behind Elizabeth. She's a champion for the working class. She's going to bring us Medicare for all. And her son's eyes were huge. And he said, yeah, wow. Hmm. And my friend said, that is what a feminist man looks like. And they went on to talk about all the ways in which it's hard to take that kind of a step as a man with privilege, a white man with privilege. Mm. And that it's difficult to do that, but that's what's necessary. And then she was just expressing hope that this planted a seed for her 14-year-old son, that it will yeah. grow as he grows, you know? And I just, it kind of made me tear up, you yeah. know?
You know, it's funny, right? Like you said there that like, oh, it's hard for men. Like actually it's not, it's less hard. It's us having to do less. It's easier.
Well,
it's us letting someone else drive the bus for a while.
Yes.
How nice would that be?
But also you're discounting how difficult it is to set aside one's ego,
yeah.
one's ambitions for a greater good. That's hard.
Yeah, I suppose it is. It doesn't feel hard to me, but you know, I'm you know, not always the same as other men.
Let me ask you a question then. When you say, you know, that men need to get to work. What specifically, like in your life, for instance, what do you think that work looks like?
You know, it looks like an active version of feminism, not passive. And what I mean by that is kind of like with anti-racism, you can't be passive. You have to be active about it, right? Mm-hmm. Because the world centers men by default, we have to go out of our way to center women. Mm-hmm. You know,
and how do you do that? Like practically, like in your everyday life, can you? I'm kind of putting you on the spot here.
Oh,
but
it's
like,
fine. I mean, I have a really great example right at hand, sitting across from me on the couch here. You know, a lot of the time when you and I are in public talking to somebody, or you know, when we're talking on videos or anything really, where we're presenting ourselves to the public, I might have things I want to say. I might have ideas that I think are important. I tend to let you lead. Mm. You know. And I tend to support you being more out front like that. Mm. And it's not that I don't think that what I have to say is important. I do. And, you know, and it's not that sometimes I don't get to say what was on my mind, because that does happen. You know, mm-hmm. there will be times when we finish a conversation, I'm like, well, I didn't get to say the thing I was hoping to say. But, you know, it seems like, you know, I, writ large, you know, by being a man, like men have had their say for, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of years. Mm. And so maybe like what I can do is just not be the same as other men in that way. Mm. You know, like people don't need to hear from me first because I'm a man in the relationship. People don't necessarily need to hear from me at all. Mm-hmm. I assume if people are curious enough, You know, maybe if you've been doing enough talking without me talking, that people are like, I wonder what Jamie thinks. They could ask me that.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you ask me. Sometimes you don't. And that's fine. I don't know. It just has to do, for me, with just letting go of ego in that way and not always viewing every situation as one in which I have to do what men do in situations like that, which is to take control and be in charge. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know, having to take control and be in charge all the time is exhausting. I have been in places in my life where I acted like that before I kind of evolved a more nuanced understanding of what it is to be a man, what all this stuff means to me personally, you know? And it's tiring having to feel like you have answers all the time.
Yeah.
You know? It's really nice, like, when you're like, I want to take charge of this. I'm like, cool. That sounds good to me.
Right.
Because I don't need to. But then what I can do is I can support you in the ways in which you are leading on the thing. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
And that's good, too. And that's an active form of work. Mm-hmm. You know? But it's just a reframing, right? It's an internal reframing of what my role can be. Like, it doesn't always have to be a leader because I'm a man.
Right.
I can be support.
Right.
You know? Like, behind every great woman is a great man. That kind of thing.
Or another great woman. Or somebody in between.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. In terms of, okay, let's go back to this example where my friend talked about the conversation with her son. You know, let's say after Bernie Sanders had his heart attack last fall, when Elizabeth Warren was doing great in the national polls. She was like leading in the national polls at that time. You know, at that time, he did have the option to be like, look, I just had a heart attack. She's doing great. She supports all these causes that I believe in too. I could really step aside, let a woman lead.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't make that choice, right? At that time, that choice would have required a bit of sacrifice on his part.
Yeah.
Sacrifice of his own personal ambition. Sacrifice of an idea that maybe he thought he could do it better than she could.
Yeah.
Right? But you know, you're not running for president. So that example doesn't apply to, like, average Joe dude. Mm-hmm. You know? So my question is, have there been crossroads in your life where you've been confronted with that kind of a potential sacrifice? Or can you imagine scenarios in your life that you that may come up for you on an everyday basis? And you and average men in general, like, and what does it feel like to be confronted with that kind of a choice? How do you make yourself aware of the fact that that choice is even available to you? You know what I mean? Like, what is the experience like?
You know, what the experience is like for me is just tempering my own instincts, you know, because the way I was raised is the way I think a lot of men were raised, a lot of boys are raised, which is to be assertive and to kind of get in first with your ideas and then to defend your ideas.
Right.
You know, and I think that, you know, in my experience, it involves a lot more listening.
Mm-hmm.
It involves just not jumping in first, like not filling every silence with my own voice, with just the idea that maybe because women were raised in the same environment in which I was raised, right? Like, we were all, you know,
socialized.
Everyone's been socialized in the same ways. You know, not every woman is going to just immediately jump into a situation and put their ideas forward, you know?
Right.
So, like, if I jump in and fill that space with my ideas, maybe I've sucked some of the oxygen out of the room for them.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And maybe, you know, by just pausing, it creates space for another voice to come in and be the first voice.
Right.
You know, and maybe that voice could be a female voice.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm in a group full of women talking, especially, I tend to listen more than I talk these days anyway. Mm. But especially in a group of women, I tend almost to treat it as a situation in which my opinion would not necessarily be unwelcome, but where maybe I should just wait until I'm addressed or my opinion is actively solicited, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, sometimes a bunch of women don't need a male voice in their space. Mm-hmm. And it's a privilege just to be allowed there to be able to listen, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Did that get at what you were getting at?
Yeah, some? I think so. I think so. I mean, I think I feel like there's lots more layers for us to unravel about this topic, you know, that we need to come to sort of a reckoning as a society. And it happens in conversations like this, you know. I'm also curious, and I'm not sure if this is something to answer in this conversation or not. Like, I'm curious to know how you approach other men with this idea. you know, with the idea of being an active feminist? How do you hold other men accountable? You know, like how, like what does that look like, you know, in everyday sort of life? Because that's the, for me, that's the kind of work that I think is going to be required if we're ever going to get anywhere close to equity, gender equity.
You know, it doesn't have to be hard, you know, like just in a conversational setting, like the one I was imagining, you know, a few seconds ago, you know, sometimes, like I have as a man, been in a lot of situations where there's like just a mixed group setting, and like there'll be people bandying about ideas, you know, and you know there'll be another man who's just like stepping on something a woman's saying, and all you gotta do as a guy is be like, hold on,
yeah, yeah,
that's literally all you have to do is just like touch a person on the arm and just be like, hey, hold on one sec, I want to hear what Sarah has to say, uh-huh. You know,
yeah,
and that's really it. Example. Just like modeling an active, like hey, hold on, let's focus on the woman who's talking now.
Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Let's focus on the woman who's talking now is not a skill that every boy in America gets socialized with.
Right.
You know? And just encouraging that in other people. Like, it doesn't have to be some big complicated thing.
Yeah.
You know?
I wish you could have been there to tell that to all of the news media folks who are making decisions about who to cover in this primary. Hey now, let's have a listen to what the women have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, I think so much social change, like big social change, it's not like one person's massive, like you don't have to be a monk setting yourself on fire. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be, have to be like a world defining dramatic photo op kind of thing. It can just be a series of small person to person interactions.
In fact, I think that's the only kind of change that's actually effective. Like, you know, when we see the big mass person on fire type demonstrations, honestly, those kinds of things can be an out for a lot of people. Say, oh, see, look, the work's being done over there in that big dramatic way, and they absolve themselves of the responsibility of doing the work in their own lives.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's sort of a diffusion of the energy, like, ah, it's being taken care of. See, see there, that very feminist man over there doing that thing, you know, when it really does require everybody to show up. Everybody who cares about actual equity needs to show up for this work.
Yep.
In everyday kind of ways in their lives.
Yeah. And I think it's the everyday that's going to make the difference and make the change. And it's interesting too, right? Because this is so complicated, but like it's what you were just saying a second ago about like when you see like what looks like bigger change or a bigger discussion on the national level, it kind of absolves you of personal responsibility. People could use that as an excuse to absolve them of personal responsibility, mm-hmm. right? To put a finer point upon it. Mm-hmm. Something else, a dynamic that I have seen happen is that people like men who are not yet fully in, you know, living a feminist kind of life get put off by constant discussions of capital F feminism. You know, mm-hmm. And I don't have a ready answer for that, you know, because like, it's not like we can't talk about it. We should be talking about it. We need to talk about it. But, you know, the discussion we were having last week about like how you attract more people to your cause, mm-hmm. you know, and so much of it being like about the tone you set or like, are you talking about things in an angry way, in a frustrated way? Are you calling out stuff constantly that you're pissed off about?
Yeah.
Or are you talking with love and encouragement and opening up a sense of possibility around the thing that you want, like which is more attractive to be around.
Yeah.
You know? And I have trouble squaring that with how pissed off I am about like how feminism is going. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because like all you really want to do a lot of the time when you see assholes like that guy on Facebook is just like be like, you're a fucking idiot, man. You know what I mean? Because he is. Like objectively speaking, that person was being an idiot.
Yeah.
You know? But that, like, that's so unproductive. All something like that does is make the person double down on how they're feeling, right? They get defensive. When you get defensive, you double down. Like, when you're attacked, you get defensive. When you get defensive, you double down. It's a predictable chain of events.
Yes.
And so telling someone who's being an idiot in these situations that they are being an idiot does literally no help and may actually work against your cause.
Yes, and the flip side of that coin, and this is a discouraging notion, is that that kind of behavior from a person like that is abusive.
Yep.
A person who's exhibiting abusive behavior, gaslighting, you know, blaming,
yep.
flipping the script, you know, becoming the victim in the situation. Yeah. It's abusive behavior.
Yeah.
When you coddle somebody like that, you enable that behavior. So there's that too.
Is there any space, do you think, between shaming and coddling?
I'm not saying that someone needs to be shamed either. And I didn't shame the guy
either.
Like, that's not, you know, I'm really careful about speaking my own thoughts and feelings about something and not calling names. It doesn't do any good.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's got to be a space there. I don't know. All I'm saying is it seems like a bit of a quandary because
it does.
Abusive people ought not be coddled either.
It's just like a really, really nuanced rhetorical space, right? Like you can't go as far towards softness as to coddle. You can't do that. That's too far.
Yeah.
But you've got to go pretty far that way if you're going to be able to speak to a person like that in a way that they'll actually listen to without becoming defensive.
Man, it's tough because, gosh, we talk all the time about how, you know, it's our responsibility to keep our own side of the street clean, that other people are responsible for their side of the street. And like the idea of talking to someone so that they will listen, like you can't control if someone's going to listen either, you know? Like,
yeah.
But I also hear your point about speaking in a way that could allow for, you know, an invitation of a conversation with somebody like that.
It's hard, right?
It's really hard.
Because all you want to do is swat them on the nose of the rolled up newspaper, you know, and show them all the ways in which they've been wrong. And you know what? People don't like that. And so here's the thing, right? On one side, you could be like, well, it's not my problem. They're acting like a jerk and they get what they deserve. But if you're actually talking about movement building, if you're actually talking about like not just wanting to blow off steam and show people that they're wrong, but actually try to do the work to help them change,
mm-hmm.
that looks really different and it looks a lot more uncomfortable.
I get it. I get it. And I agree with you. And at the same time, sometimes injustice just needs to be named plainly.
Yep.
So I'm holding both of those things right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure exactly if there's a way to tie that up with a bow.
No.
You know?
Yeah, I don't think there is. But right, like the difference there, that thing that you can't right now tie up with a bow.
Yeah.
That bow is what we need. That's the thing that's going to make the difference.
Is it? I mean, does it exist? That's my question. I'm not sure it exists. Maybe we need a little of both of those things.
Yeah.
Maybe
I don't know.
I don't know what it is either. Well, you come here for answers, everybody, don't you? Like,
sorry.
Spoiler, we don't have any.
No.
But, you know, good conversation nonetheless. I think it's one that we need to be having. Also, can I just say, in my conversation with my friend about her 14-year-old son, we were talking about feminism in general.
Yeah.
We both agreed that feminism is effing sexy. And so if for no other reason,
right?
You know, people listening here, be more feminist because it'll make you more sexy.
Seriously. Hey, yeah, purely selfishly speaking, guys, if you want to attract a better class of female into your life,
if you're into
that kind of thing, you know, and honestly, if you want to attract a better class of human, yeah.
Dude, yeah.
Yeah, totally. If you want to attract a better person into your life in any way, like be more feminist.
And be more anti-racist and be more just in your own life.
Being a better person is pretty attractive.
It really is. It really is. Awesome. Well, thanks for that great conversation.
You too.
Tough as it might be and all that, you know, I think, you know, you asked me earlier how I was doing and I was like, I'm pretty okay. And you're like, yeah, but I think you've been pretty angry. And yes, there have been days of anger and sadness, but really on balance, I feel, I feel courage, you know, and that makes me feel okay. You know, I see strong women leading the way in this time. Elizabeth Warren among the top of that list.
Yeah.
In a way that she is proceeding beyond the end of her presidential campaign in a way that in which she clearly seems to be determined to use her power in the way that she best sees fit in this time, mm-hmm. you know. Like that's inspiring as can be.
Yeah.
I feel courage that, you know, that there are women working, you know, for this cause in their own ways. I see it all over the place. I see people being moved in this moment to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, in a really important way to do some dissection about what the quote unquote progressive left needs to be doing vis-a-vis this discussion. I feel hope about that.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a long freaking way to go, but those things do give me courage. And so, yeah, like I on balance, I don't find myself giving in to hopelessness, throwing my hands up in the air. I know that that doesn't do me any good. It doesn't do anybody any good.
Yeah, and you know, the work continues. Elizabeth isn't going to be president this time around, but it doesn't mean that her voice is silenced, you know? She's still going to be amazing, and she's still going to advance these causes forward. We as a society, we screwed up, you know? And the way in which we screwed up really shines a spotlight on some of the work that we need to do.
Yeah.
You know, here's the thing, like, we as a society will elect a woman when we're ready. And when we're ready is kind of a proxy statement for when we get our act together.
Yeah.
You know, like, we as a society will be ready when we have done the work to get our act together enough to understand that we can have female leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And that we're not threatened by that, and that actually that might make us all better.
It might. I think a woman's leadership in this particular moment in history would be great.
She couldn't possibly do worse than we've been doing so far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. Hey, so I want to hear in our Misfit Stars Facebook group, which is for our supporting members.
Yeah.
I want to hear your thoughts. Difficult thoughts, complex thoughts, raw thoughts,
yeah.
Whatever they might be. I'm curious to know where you all are at with this topic. And if you are not part of our Facebook group, our private Facebook group, it's for members, supporting members of our podcast. And so if you're listening to this and you're like, you know what? I would like to be part of that discussion.
In a safe space.
Yeah. Please come become a supporting member of Misfit Stars. You go to misfitstars.com/join. You sign up at the level that makes the most sense for you, starting at $5 a month.
Yeah.
And there are goodies that we will send you for each of those levels. And also one of the things that you get is an invitation to be part of this private Facebook group. We would love to see you there.
Which is so nice because no one in there is an asshole. Because I know, like us, I'm sure all of y'all have also been having these conversations in general public Facebook. And I'm sure that your experience of them, like ours, is that they don't always get populated by people who are speaking in good faith and trying to be considerate of one another, you know?
Yeah.
The Misfit Stars private Facebook group is the antidote to that.
That's really
Everybody
true.
In there is working as hard as they possibly can to be considerate and kind. And it's just a soothing balm.
It really is.
Oh, it's the best.
I love you, stars.
Yeah, so much.
That's it for this week.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the world will bring something into our laps to talk about next week.
Holy hell.
We will await that in the next 7 days.
With bated breath, really.
And until then, I really hope that y'all take good care of yourselves.
Yeah, me too. We love you guys.
And we'll talk to you soon.
See ya.
Bye.